Hello and welcome to Sprott Radio. I'm your host, Ed Coyne, Senior Managing Partner at Sprott Asset Management. I'm pleased today to welcome back one of our very own, Maria Smirnova, Senior Portfolio Manager at Sprott Asset Management. Maria, thank you for joining Sprott Radio.
Hi, Ed, and thanks everyone for joining us.
Well, you know, Maria, before we go into sort of the outlook on silver going forward, can you give us a quick recap of what happened in 2023 as relates to silver?
Last year was not a great year for the silver price. Silver held in, it was pretty flat, but relatively to other markets and other metals such as gold, it definitely underperformed. And like I said, it was pretty flat versus gold was up 13%. And obviously some of the major markets were up even more. But I would say that, you know, one thing we should realize though, is on average, the silver price did improve for the year last year to $23.10 per ounce. And that was up from $21.73 per ounce in 2022. And I would like to remind people that, you know, even a few years back, even as recently as 2019, the silver price was in the mid-teens. It was about $16 on average. So the silver price has improved over the last few years, particularly after COVID. And of course, our outlook going forward is we think that there's things in the market that people necessarily don't realize, but silver price could go a lot higher because of the dynamics of the market going forward.
Well, and that's what I want to dive into today are some of those dynamics. Before we do that, though, you mentioned something about, you know, gold was up 13% and silver was relatively flat. Historically, people have talked a lot about the gold to silver ratio. In the modern era, from your view, does that really still matter? Do you use that at all? You know, how should investors think about that now going forward?
I do look at the gold to silver ratio sometimes, but it's not something that I really look at closely. I think it's a good metric to see where we are relatively in the cycle. For example, back in 2020, it reached about 120-1. And basically at that time, silver was thrown out with, you know, like a baby with the bathwater because the concern was that with COVID, industry would shut down and nobody needs silver. But at that time, I said that that's the high and silver would outperform gold. And of course, that's exactly what happened. Silver did outperform gold because when we see actual interest in the metals, when we see Western investors come and buy the ETFs, have an interest in silver as an investment, silver tends to react faster and more because it's just such a small market, it is really easy to move the price. So I think, again, you can look at certain points in history as markers, and you look at the gold to silver ratio, you know, you can look at the highs and lows. Like right now, we're at about 90-1. So it's still a pretty high ratio, I would say, which tells me that it is likely that silver will outperform gold going forward, but obviously it's not a guarantee. I know it's a long-winded answer, Ed, but I do look at it, but I wouldn't swear by it. You know, it's not something I pay a lot of attention to.
It's not an absolute. I think that's the takeaway here is it's a tool, but it's certainly not an absolute. You know, you touched on kind of Western buyers of silver versus, you know, sort of the rest of the world or Eastern buyers. You know, we're seeing the demand continue to increase in silver. Who are some of the buyers today? Where is a lot of that demand coming from?
Silver has always been a metal of two heads, as I call it. And, you know, half of the demand is industrial and the other half is investment and investment-like categories such as jewelry, silverware, and actual bar and coin investment. In recent times, though, that has been shifting and industrial demand has been gaining, relatively speaking. It now represents over half of total demand for silver. And that's the category that has been growing really strongly. In fact, projections are last year it hit a record high of 632 million ounces in a 1.1 or 1.2 billion ounce market. Of course, when we talk about investment demand, that's physical investment in coins and bars, which has been growing strongly. It hit a record in 2022. But projections are, and I say projections because we actually don't have final data for 2023, but projections are for last year for that demand to decline. Now, when I say Western investors, really the easiest gauge for that is ETFs or exchange traded funds. That's the most visible kind of number we can look at because it's on Bloomberg, it's on other data sources. So, you know, we've seen outflows in ETFs. So I feel that obviously demand has been shifting from the West to the East in terms of investing demand. We are seeing record buying out of China recently. Trading in Shanghai has been really strong. In fact, Chinese are paying a premium for silver of about $2.50 or $2.70 per ounce sometimes. That's a pretty big premium, you know, 10% or more, again, in a tiny market. So to answer your question, the short answer is industrial is gaining importance, number one. And the second takeaway is demand shifted to the East for now. When we do have that Fed pivot or when we do have something in the economy that sparks investor demand over here in North America and in the West, that will potentially really drive prices higher. So that's kind of overall how I think about demand for silver.
Okay. And speaking of that demand or staying on that topic, you talk about industrial. That's a very broad net, right? So what are some of the major industrial applications we're seeing today in silver?
Well, of course, electronics are a big component of silver. Silver, as you know, is a great conductor of electricity. So electronics and electrical applications represent a very big amount. Of course, we discuss solar or photovoltaics as a very important application. And that's something we focus on because that's a very fast growing segment. In fact, over the last 9 to 10 years, solar has grown about 16% per year on average. And in fact, last year it reached almost 190 million ounces. That's a record. And that's up from 140 million in 2022. So that's huge growth from, you know, it started with a small base, obviously, but it's gaining importance as we go along. And projections are for that growth to continue because, number one, you know, as governments seek cleaner air for their countries, there's definitely political / policy objectives for cleaner energy. And that's a wholly other subject. But I think investment in solar will continue. We've made projections and we've actually published an article stating that by 2030, we think that silver use in solar alone could easily reach 300 million ounces. Well, think about that. That's 30% of silver total supply. That includes mine and scrap supply. And that's an incremental over 100 million ounces that we'll need just for solar. That's about 10 big mines, 5 to 10 big mines. So that's another big use. Obviously, so silver is used in electric vehicles as well, or vehicles in general. But as we transition from ICEs or internal combustion engines to electric vehicles and hybrids, the loadings of silver are increasing per vehicle. And so just by definition, as that ratio of electric vehicles increases, silver use is increasing as well. It's not as big of a use as solar currently, but it's definitely been growing at a good clip and will continue to do so. So those are kind of the major uses of silver in industrial.
What's going on in the mining part of silver right now?
So my job obviously is to meet with mining companies and track mining companies more so than the macro side of things. Because we invest in these companies, I try to find new projects specifically in silver. I always ask everyone, hey, give me silver ideas. And the truth is mine supply has been stagnant for the last 10 years. You know, if we look back to 2013, mine production was at 845 million ounces. If we look back at last year, projections are for about 820 million ounces. Well, that's actually a decline of 25 million ounces. Now, last year was an anomaly because there was a big strike in Mexico that shut down some silver production at a big mine. But even in 2022, it was 837 million ounces. So the takeaway is mine supply has not changed in 10 years. Think about it, Ed. That is incredible to me, you know, because obviously there are companies that are exploring silver. They're trying to find new deposits, build new mines. Well, we've gone nowhere in 10 years. And that's because, A, the silver price has been relatively weak you know, as we've discussed, there's not been much investment into exploration. Companies have not been able to get a lot of funding. So the focus has shifted to things like copper and lithium and nickel and even gold. But silver has been kind of left behind. And going forward, I would say that, again, I am always looking for new exploration stories. There are some new deposits on the table, but they will still take years to permit, advance, build, and put into production. So in terms of the outlook for the mining side of things anyways, I wouldn't see spectacular growth. And on the scrap side, on the recycling side, it's the same thing. It's been exactly flat at about 180 million ounces a year since 2013 for the last 10 years. And the story there is simple. Recycling is quite price sensitive. And because, again, silver prices have not been very high, there's not been that incentive to recycle. And as we go forward, by the way, and if we think about, again, solar panels, I don't even know if they're recycled, but solar panels are hard to recycle. And a lot of the uses that we think about, if you think about a car or your phone or a TV, silver goes into these things in relatively small amounts, meaning there's not much incentive to get it out. You know, the technology is not necessarily there to get the silver out. So a lot of the silver that goes into industry is never to be seen again. So what is recycled? Well, it's things like spoons and forks, you know, silverware, jewelry is recycled, things that kind of are easier to melt down for scrap. So that's kind of the picture, you know. For the supply side of things, it's really, I don't see much growth coming up from anywhere.
So it's interesting then, as the demand kind of continues to creep up, whether it's solar or whether it's industrial in general, the auto industry and so forth, you got to believe that there'll be a pinch point somewhere along the way, you know, and we're not here to prognosticate where the price is headed, but do you see an environment where silver could touch new highs? You know, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think silver at one point broke, you know, north of 50. I think it touched over 60 for a moment in time, you know. That's before we get into inflation adjusted numbers. Do you see that kind of parabolic move again, potentially in silver, because this demand continues to grow and supply has been relatively flat? How should investors be thinking about that as they look to potentially add this to their portfolio?
Yeah, that's an excellent question, Ed. One of the pushbacks, despite these continued supply demand deficits in silver, the pushback has been on the ground inventories. Silver is held in London at the LBMA. Silver is held at the COMEX. Also in Shanghai, there's inventories. In recent years, those above ground inventories have been over 1 billion ounces. Now, what's happened with the recent deficits, we have taken a chunk out of those ETFs of about 400 million ounces. If that continues, in other words, if these deficits continue to translate into a reduction in above ground inventories, that's something we need to watch, obviously. And yes, there will be a pinch point then. And by the way, a lot of the LBMA inventories are actually not freely available. They're actually held by the, you know, they're accounted for the exchange traded funds. Mm-hmm. So we can't actually look at all these inventories and say they're available. But that's an aside. That's another point. Just in general, what I am looking for is the continued reduction in the inventories. Silver could very well play out kind of like palladium did a few years back, where people ignored deficits. There was deficit after deficit, a year after year. And at some point, palladium price just exploded. So sometimes it just takes a while and a few years of things to reach that pinch point, after which there's nowhere for the price to go but up.
Not to draw any parallels, but we've certainly seen that in uranium the last couple of years. It was ignored for better part of a decade, and then the world sort of woke up and certainly took off. And again, not to draw a direct parallel to the two, but it sort of feels like that's brewing in the silver market as well. What other topics should we be talking about, or things that I didn't ask that you think investors would benefit from listening to this podcast? Is there anything that I didn't bring up that you'd want to leave the listeners with?
One thing we did not talk about is silver equities themselves.
Let's talk about that.
The miners, the producers, and the explorers. And they've really, like I said, they've really had a hard time, and they've reached valuations that are at funny levels nowadays. If you look kind of at most financial/valuation metrics, silver equities are by no means expensive. And in fact, they're quite cheap. You know, people ask me all the time, why is that? Why is there no interest in the equities? And I'm not quite certain. All I know is that there's been no interest. Meanwhile, you know, the Magnificent Seven is reaching bubble proportions. Right. So I think people have been focused elsewhere. And there's been no need to look at gold and silver equities. Gold equities are in a similar position, by the way, because, you know, the economy is ticking away. Unemployment is low. There's a quote unquote no crisis. Who needs gold and silver equities? Well, you know, I can't predict the future, but I think there will be a time when that changes. And like I said, demand has already been shifting to the East. So as you know, people in the East are long-term thinkers and they position for the future. So I think we in the West should wake up and have the same type of interest because these are strategic resources, mm-hmm. right? These are things we'll need, especially silver. I consider silver a critical mineral. It is a critical mineral, even though it's not really on the critical mineral lists, not in Canada, not in the US, unfortunately, not sure why that is, but it is. It's a metal for the future. And as we've discussed, those futuristic type uses are already growing at a fast clip. To me, silver is very important, and I think we do need to invest in the miners to secure that future, right? So I'm very interested in the miners, and I'm very interested in silver bullion as well. Mm-hmm. I think both are good ways to play. It'll take a bit of time, I think, for the interest to come back in the equity space.
Yeah, I think you touched on a great point, which is silver really is the metal of the future. I mean, you know, copper's gotten a resurgence as it's needed more and more in technology. You can't move, you know, electricity from point A to point B without it. And it feels like silver is kind of in the same category. People have thought about it one way for so long that they can't really open their mind to it as a modern metal in a lot of ways. So I think there's some exciting times to come for silver, and we'll continue to lean on you and your expertise to help us kind of guide our way through these opportunities. Maria, I always appreciate you taking the time to give us some updates of what's going on in the space. So thank you for once again making the time today to be on Sprott Radio.
Thank you, and have a wonderful day.
Thank you. And for all the listeners that want to learn more about Maria and her work and really all the research that we do on silver, I encourage you as always to visit us at sprott.com. That's sprott.com and get some updates on what we're doing in the silver space, whether it's on the physical side or the equity side. Once again, I'm your host, Ed Coyne, and thank you for listening to Sprott Radio.
This podcast is provided for information purposes only from sources believed to be reliable. However, Sprott does not warrant its completeness or accuracy. Any opinions and estimates constitute our judgment as of the date of this material and are subject to change without notice. Past performance is not indicative of future results. This communication is not intended as an offer or solicitation for the purchase or sale of any financial instrument. Any opinions and recommendations herein do not take into account individual client circumstances, objectives, or needs, and are not intended as recommendations of particular securities, financial instruments, or strategies. You must make your own independent decisions regarding any securities, financial instruments, or strategies mentioned or related to the information herein. This communication may not be redistributed or retransmitted in whole or in part or in any form or manner without the express written consent of Sprott. Any unauthorized use or disclosure is prohibited. Receipt and review of this information constitutes your agreement not to redistribute or retransmit the contents and information contained in this communication without first obtaining express permission from an authorized officer of Sprott.